done 1965, closed 1985. As soon as 20 years up, we're going, we've done elsewhere. All those factories are gone. As soon as I had to pay the proper going rate for land and everything else, they were gone. Ford's held on and they got massive grants from the government down there. It's been asking like a government-sponsored factory for years. Clean for everything. They started apprentices the first 3 years of every apprentice, and they made money on them. They weren't getting that much money. So we'll just move on elsewhere.
Do you think it's a better or worse situation since, say, the last 10 years, last decade, since the peace process? Do you think there's been more opportunities? Or do you think it's been opportunities for the multinational corporations to come in here and exploit working people?
Well, in our situation in this we came on for, before the peace process, the people trying to downsize our factory for years and years. And I started there 30 years ago, was working on the South Gate Road. The first volunteer of the apprentices was 4 years ago, and they just kept downsizing. I would say their plan, you know, they're talking about this past 3 to 4 years, they really didn't plan on the action. I think the plan was formulated an awful long time ago. Seriously, I think this one is purely developed to downsize Ford, not just us. Whenever I started with Ford, there was 57,000 workers in the UK. My belief now is it's 25,000. And Ford plants are probably the next target. I don't think there's any security whatsoever with any multinational corporation.
Now, manufacturers, Dan. All they're going to have is call centers here in the service industries. I could tell the multinationals coming in.
Well, Dan, I have a few questions or a few comments. How did you manage a day-to-day factory? Was it through mass assemblies or what? Did you develop links with other... When I was up in the factory myself, there was people from school occupations in England, there was other factories being occupied. What type of links? What advice would you give to fellow workers, unionised or not, about if they're suffering similar cutbacks, any advice you would?
Well, the first thing is don't be afraid to occupy. They threatened us with court action, they threatened us with various different things. Don't be afraid to occupy.
Because we had nothing to lose.
None whatsoever. We were forced into this situation, and we were probably unique in, among the three plants, Basel and Renfrew were the other two, and that we had a secure site. And that was probably due to the conflict here, where the whole site was line fenced by a fence with razor wire on the top of it and the neighbour's side of it. So there was only two access points. It was what we call the back gate and the front gate. With control of those gates was taken very, very quickly. So we were lucky in that respect. Some of the other advice I would give is, regardless of what you think of your local politicians, write to them and get them on your side. It keeps them in the public domain. And write to all of them. Also your MEPs. That's what they're elected for.
I have a high profile, keeping their faces at all the time. There's an extra smaller student I've been taking over in England as well.
Yeah.
The short young thing that they occupy the same as well.
I think the other difference between the Belfast plant and the two English plants was that the workers there never actually left the plant. Whereas in the two English plants, they left the plant and had to break back in, which was considerably more difficult. So, you know, the guys never left the plant, they just said, we're not leaving. Took the doors off, secured the gates, etc, etc. There was a lot of teamwork in it. Whilst, as you said, people went around and were stunned, there were those few people who got a good grasp of what was going on very quickly and took action to secure the plant for the men, and then everybody else kept in behind that.
Action.
Yeah.
Just put a big board up and everybody put their ideas on. We're picking the dealers, the drop-out letters, and went to the managers' houses. One lived out near the Nays, one lived in
Downpatrick,
and held ahead, and went to their houses. And they weren't in screenings. So we knew there was a spat in the camp, and we exposed him. A guy had been up with his kids, been around, and he was watching everything. And he was reporting back, how well organized, what's morale like, who are the ringleaders? So we never come back. You know, so.
Well, I think we looked at the shop steers committee at the start to help us organize things, and we were quite happy to retain them as our committee we'd organize things. But as Mark says,
were they elected, were they at the start?
They had previously been elected as the shop steers. So we were quite happy with that. It was our own workforce that elected them. But Mark says we had a massive whiteboard, probably about 8 foot wide, about 4 foot high, and ideas were put up there. But I think one of the important things about this is listen to everybody's idea. No matter how silly it might seem at the time, to listen to all the ideas that come forward. Certainly someone they may never take action on, but someone are very, very good, and everybody will have their own idea, and every situation will bring out its own ideas. I think it's important to listen to everybody's thoughts on this, because everybody that's there and has worked on plan, it's been there and impacted on it as well. But I think one of the things too, the Irish plan, I wouldn't say that we're more open. I think we're more capable of responding to this situation. As I said there, the people in England took the Irish plan and had to come back again. And they actually caused themselves an awful lot more hardship than we should. Their court actions over and over very, very quickly, and they then had to pick it outside. So they didn't have the shelter we had. We had total control of the factory, including the canteen. They were outside there again. They were sleeping in tents. They were sleeping on the roofs of buildings. And I have to admire them for that. On the first day when we heard they left, I thought they was bitterly disappointed, but they came back on board very, very quickly, and they took control of the plants. They're still in control of those plants because they're picking outside the gates, so we're not going to move inside or outside of those plants. But it's actions like that that people can take. You need to see where where you can stop things from moving around the plant. Their plants are probably bigger estates, you know, with different roadways and things like that. And so we were able to only two access points, so we secured one gate completely so it couldn't be opened, so it meant then the focus was then on one single gate. And that was the only access in and out of the plant.
We got really bad advice from the union about going to court. Now the other two plants, they were up in court, and the judge says, right, the gentleman, all charges will be dropped if you don't go back on the factory. So that's how they got them out. So we were up in the High Court on, say, the Tuesday morning, and we got a phone call from Jimmy Kelly, who said if he didn't, and there was any... Okay. He was involved in the water idea, right? I'll tell you a story about it. We got a phone call about 9 o'clock the night before, and says, I don't think it's either, and I don't think it's in everybody's best interest to have a barrister at the court tomorrow morning. So nobody says, doesn't look good here, like, you know, so nobody knew what to do with the phone. One of the guys from Sinn Féin, he says, you need a barrister. So you can try to get tapped to court. You know, but there's a case up against it, and there's nobody representing the workers in the plant. And he would say, this guy's like, Can you get us a barrister for tomorrow morning? But a minute, difficult for us because the workforce is 50-50. So we had a friend say this. You just tell us not to go for a barrister. But Sinn Féin says, go on for a barrister. So we had to put it at the shop floor. And all the men said, listen, I think we should go for a barrister in the morning. And it was the best move ever made. Because we said to the barrister, can we get this stop, this eviction? No. Can you get it to the head? We can get it to the head. Give you some time to work on things. So, you know. But Jimmy Kelly, when he first got to our plant, we knew he'd come from Waterford Crossley, he was like a breath of fresh air. He spoke with passion, courage and conviction. Step on their faces, solidarity with our plant, all right? And then we had a rally down the town on the Friday. And he got up and he spoke again. He's great. Rishi McKee, everybody spoke. Everybody went back to the plant. And they were boosted by his confidence, you know. There was a letter from the union, a repudiation letter. That, you know, taking on more to do this. I never saw Jimmy Kelly again. Never come near the place from that, you know. So we got bad advice from him.
What was the concessions achieved? Why do you think they had a vote in Belfast plant on a Sunday and the rest of the plants?
Yes.
Because that's an hour. I heard a few things.
That was totally wrong. Totally wrong, you know. And the price rate of the plants across the water. Because our boys had been over visiting them, and they were physically, they were wealthy. It wouldn't have taken too much to shift them, to get them out. Because they were in gazebos outside, and they didn't toilet facilities, and nothing like that. We were in a 5-star hotel compared to those guys, you know. And they went to them and said, oh, Vistia Corporation is ready to fight for Chapter 11. There's no money, but if you don't take it, you're going to get nothing. And you knew that it was going to be a massive vote for those two, and then they came to us a couple of days later.
But I think one of the things that has to be understood too is that part of the hardship they faced over in England was the police and security men were going to threaten these guys. And I think we're threatening violence, especially the security men, and then we didn't have that security at all. As Mark says, the security left. I think the security left after 30 hours. There was an occasion, I think on the first night, where there was six guys pulled up in the car and replaced the security man. And someone just shouted, you know, it's really good, it's not worth the bats. And fair play, they just turned to get into their cars and left. So we didn't have that hardship. The English plants, I still don't believe that they realise the impact this is going to have on their lives. Maybe they have better job opportunities than we have. I don't know what way you could explain it, but I was very disappointed that they took their vote so quickly. And I think their vote was taken to try and force our hand in the rope. Whenever they had their vote, realistically it meant that our vote didn't matter. If our vote plant had voted against the settlement, it still would have been a majority. Had that been the case, then we would have went home. We would have stepped over and taken it on our own. As I say, we wanted our jobs back. We didn't want a financial settlement. We seriously didn't want it. And I would say, if you talk to anybody in the plant now, who would rather have your job or have the money, they'll tell you they want their job. It's as simple as that.
Well, the standard joke now, anybody goes for another job, and they'll say, what was your previous occupation? 6 weeks in Vistela.
Does anyone have anything to say? Anything at all?
I have a question. See that, you know, the last few weeks' experience for both of you. I mean, is there anything you think collectively, you know, as workers, you should do differently? If you look at it, you know, from hindsight.
I would say we would be more cautious of the media. The media are very quick to pick up on any single item. Any single thing at all, and they will manipulate it to their way of thinking. In terms of the media, the one group of media that have been very supportive and have probably reported things more correctly than any others, BBC. I never thought I would have heard myself saying the BBC were being supportive. The BBC have been in that company as long as we have, and they're actually running that round next week on Spotlight. That would be a test to see whether they actually have reported it properly. We have found them to be probably the best in terms of reporting it and not giving an opinion which isn't correct.
Receiving information.
They haven't been doing that. I would say if you are going to speak to the media, maybe it should be channeled through one person or one group of people. The media are very quick to come up to the plant and interview people. Just for a minute, so what's happened to me the other day, I was sitting in the canteen, and it was an independent media news, interviewing Brian Burns, and I actually heard Brian's blurred that the other day, he's been here over 30 years, and I actually had a mic pushed on beneath my mouth, and it was being gracious. So that's how quickly they'll do this, especially in the first few days, because people still don't have it formulated in their head what they're doing. You know, they know they're there, and they know they're on the kind of plant, but in the first few days, you don't really know what it is you're going to do and how you're going to organise. You know, as we were saying earlier on about the notice board for ideas and things like that, and appointing the committee, I think it's important to get organised as quickly as possible. And listen to the people and trust the people that you put there as your organising committee. Like John McGuire, our convener, John, I would say, has probably done more as far as the union's concerned than any other individual, and that includes the communities across the world. John has been very straight with everything he has said. He has reported back to the plant things that we didn't want to hear. Mm-hmm. He has never held anything back from us. You get my admiration for that. And I think that's important as well. Of people there that you can trust to give you the information, whether it's good or bad information or information you like or don't like, that at least you know what's happened. I think that's one very important thing as well.
I never really made any mistakes either. I played it really well. Like I had Bobby's story was in one game and Jackie McDonald was in the other. Jerry Adams got one day at the end because he was up the next. Now, we all know what politicians are like, you know, they go and open up an envelope, especially when elections coming up, but every single party come up. You know, only Bobby that never got was probably the Salvation Army. I think they let us down, you know. Everybody wants to never show. So which was good, and it did boost morale, people coming up.
My son, the student over in Norwich, and he came home pretty certain around the time this was happening. And over Easter, he sat down and wrote all the political parties that he could think of. He even hand-delivered letters around Belfast. And the first person to respond was Jackie Donaldson. So he was surprised at it. And was on House of Commons paper. The next person to respond was to Charles Clark, the MP for Norwich. You know, so he got a doubt to get it over and I got it as well to get a push on. And you know, we can say what we want about politicians and various political groups, but if you don't get them on your side, you have to try to get them on your side in some form or another to keep it in the public eye.
We've got Basil McRae down the menu running with a red tie, talking about capitalism. Breakthrough, you know?
I think the important thing was, as I say, the action you took was kind of force on the agenda and force him to sit and take notice. I obviously, as an anarchist, I would never trust them whether elected or not. At the end of the day, I think it's important to make sure you control your own struggle. And use head mass assemblies every day, that's the most important. And just build links with the family, local community, and other trade unions. What is the situation at the plan?
I would say, but everything seemed very flat. Mm-hmm. Because people are expecting to get paid out, to get closure on this and move on. But as I say, at the minute they want us off the site before any payments will be made. We don't trust them. There is a meeting due at 3:30 to see what the next move is going to be.
There's a convener from Anfield's come over, Kevin Nolan.
Right.
So he's come over and he's going to have a meeting with us and he's going to take our mind at the sites of Belfast and he's staying over now. The convener in Basel, the first few days of us, pulled us up, pulled one of the guys up. Can you get somebody over here to blow this place up? I was like, right, hope you weren't half 7, see at the back gate, you know, I don't know. You know,
Belfast.
You know, on their heads, you know, so. And then Rob Williams, you know, he's been sacked at
Linamar,
and they got they're chopping their wages by 10%, and after agreeing terms and conditions last July, they're getting hampered now with their final pensions scheme and terms and conditions, and so that's going to go next. And
so I was going to say, I think the thing that is happening at the minute as well is, you know, big companies are using the recession as an excuse to take away workers' terms and conditions that were, you know, pre-Maggie Thatcher trade union law agreements, and they're just whittling away at them, either by closing the factories altogether or by closing a few and then saying to other workers, you know, this too could happen to you, take a cut in your pay and conditions. And that's the sort of outcome that there is going to be. I actually think that Ford and Visteon never expected the workers in the Belfast factory and the other factories to be as militant as they have been. And as Debbie said, and Mark, the workers in Belfast were lucky due to the layout of the factory that they could secure it. But the other thing I think that there has been is that people in Northern Ireland realise that once these jobs go, there are no replacement jobs. Mm-hmm. And there has been a great deal of consensus between all the men, you know, whether they were in supervisor position on the shop floor, foreman, group leader or whatever, there has been no division amongst the guys. And the business of the whiteboard meant that everybody had an opportunity to have a voice. And then there was a consensus taken on the ideas that were on the whiteboard as to what would be most effective and what would be the most popular source of action, so that nobody felt excluded from it either. I mean, I don't think, you know, just in listening to the guys coming home and chatting to them up in the plant, etc., nobody feels excluded from this action.
They may have got away with it, but see if they closed the factory on a Saturday or a Sunday. See if they waited until there was nobody in the factory. And went down with extra security, changed the case, whatever. We turn off the work on Monday morning. It might have been a different outcome here. Mm-hmm. You know what? That was a miscalculation on our part. We've been stuck out to that gate the same thing. And you might have had the resolve to keep it going around the time. But there was also the bigger picture. And, you know, the unions were looking at the bigger picture too, because we had got a victory in this. It would inspire other people as well. Mm-hmm. And also the bosses were doing it as well. See, we had these guys, but another thing here is going to encourage other groups as well to do the same.
I think where we learn points about this type of thing, the boss is certainly around them as well. They're probably looking at things and
they have a Saturday the next day.
They have a great spot just in their behalf. Mm-hmm. And you need to try and think at least one or two strategies beyond them all the time.
One step ahead.
But the thing about the jobs, you know, you keep hearing me saying that we wanted to retain our jobs. They weren't our jobs as such. We were really only custodians of those jobs. Those jobs were supposed to be for future generations. and you work somewhere for 33 years, you don't walk up, want to walk away from the job and think nobody's going to replace you. And they've taken that away from the local communities here in Rutland. They've taken that opportunity for other younger people to come through and do my job and get paid for it. And I think that's one of the saddest things. And when I mentioned that I get Toshiba there, I'm not sure whether Toshiba still have plants in England, but why the government sit back and allow them to continue to sell their product whenever they close down is something I just can't believe. And I'm sure there's a lot of us sitting in this room now, we're going to buy a TV 2 or 3 years from now, and Toshiba's the cheapest one we'll probably buy it anyway. Mm-hmm. But we continue to buy the products that these companies manufacture. And maybe that's the sort of action needs to be taken, or some type of boycott of these companies needs to take place, not just here, but throughout Europe. You know, the fuel rail that you hear us talking about, the InvestNI, pump money into the development of that, the crash tests and things like that here, and one of the regulations about that was that they wouldn't move that product outside of the European Union without the written consent of InvestNI. They just went ahead and did that anyway. And InvestNI are going to try and claw their money back, but I believe the European Union need to look at it as well, because if that was one of the regulations that this European Parliament needs to take these people to task and impose some sort of really heavy financial burden on the government. It's not an ideal situation, but they need to be heard where it hurts the most, which is in their pocket. But we continue to buy their products. I'm sure a lot of people on the planet will probably never buy a Ford car again. But then again, if it's the cheapest car, they might.
I was going to talk in great detail about the different campaigns and stuff I've been involved in the last decade between out there, but I think it's important that we learn the lessons from yourselves and listen to it. It's very, very inspiring. But one question I'd ask you is, if the politicians hadn't have got involved, do you think you would have won the concessions as you've actually won?
I think we would have eventually, because I think it was tools within the plants that were used. One of the tools that we have is a ranger tool, and it's still a very nice young farm in Oregon, and they made a monopole for ranger. What I had forgotten about was a thing called a runner pack too. You put these runner packs inside the monopole before as well, they'd forgotten to take it out. We had it and the backup turned out well, that would have been something never going on, I'm not sure. On the fuel rails we had helium testers, which they don't have in South Africa. I think helium's about 16 feet down on the earth, so when you pressurize on over helium and there's any leak, it appears almost instantly. South Africa don't have that. And I'm sure Ford could probably get one made fairly quickly if it needed to, but it would involve them putting a lot of money into it. But as a result of them not having that, some of the fuel rails that have appeared in Bridgend, their engine plant, they're happy workers who have been covered in petrol and under pressure in the car. So it's a major safety concern now for Ford. So I think having things like that has helped us that we eventually would have got some concession, whether it would have been the same concession we have now, I'm not, I couldn't really say.
So the brewery closed last year. My brother worked over 20 years. And politicians couldn't save the brewery, because the men weren't prepared to fight really enough, you know, they lost out their pensions too and stuff like that. They didn't get a great deal. And I think the politicians would have gotten involved because we'd done it up there. Mm-hmm. You know, but there was meetings in Stormont last year with God and jury, and Adams was involved in it. And I told Adams, we're going to fix Belfast. There are no plans to close it. So I think he's taking this a bit personally.
I'm really sorry. Did I leave a coat? Oh, I'm sorry about that.
So I think he's taking this personally, because he feels that he's doing the trade. Mm-hmm. But these boys told him he didn't he tried to get him on Fleming out of Ford. And on 6 occasions, they just got blackballed. And Arlene Foster, she's in up in Stormont, she tried to contact Ford on 6 occasions. So she was starting to be elected representatives. You know, they didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, they were going to go above. They were going to go to Ford in America. Then that's when they started them.
Elected representatives. You know, realistically, whether we like it or not, they're government ministers here in Northern Ireland. It was government ministers that they were ignoring, and that was actually raised in the Assembly in the debate on Tuesday. You know, Ford were being so high-handed, they feel that they don't need to respond to government questions. And hopefully they will take them to task on that. The support Yes, I think it was important that we got all the politicians, because that's a public university. If you don't have the public support, it does certainly make it a lot harder. But we were lucky that we did have the public support among all the communities here in Northern. You know, it wasn't just one side. Mark said it was nearly half and half. Religious ways in our plant, we had support from all of them. You know, which we were very, very lucky to have. I think without that, it certainly would have made it an awful lot harder. And with the derogatory offer that Vestal made at the start, I think they were trying to wear us down. They were hoping they could wear us down to get us out. But then, as Mark said, you know, with the facilities that were in the plant compared to Anfield, that was like a five-star hotel, so we could have held out for as long as we wanted.
Our managers told us last year, you know, the speech and all that, it's not even make the headlines of us. It's not make the headlines. Prove them wrong, that one, you know.
But even in terms of support as well, you know, in a few days, support came in from all over the world. You know, there were letters up there from Brazil.
Ford workers as well, is it?
Well, the Ford workers, just all their union members as well. Brazil, New Zealand, Australia, States, Poland. You know, you just keep on going with the list of countries that were prepared to get the support and saying that it was an inspiration. But the thing is, Mark and I are just two ordinary guys. You know, normally we wouldn't stand out in the crowd, but Mark would stand out a wee bit more than me, but but you know, we wouldn't normally stand out in the crowd and be anything special. There really is nothing special about us. There's probably nothing special about any individuals up in that plant, but collectively, we have become something different. And hopefully we have been the positive inspiration that people do need. Big business tend to make you think, once we make the decision, there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I think we have reversed that. There is something you can do about it, but you have to take the first step.
Okay, does anyone have...